You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Making waves. Hey, welcome to Waking. Well, welcome to Waking. I'm going to try that.
Welcome to Waking Up. This is
the wonderful part of editing is that I can do things over again. But here's the thing. I'm not going to do it over again. I'm just going to say welcome to Making Waves. Oh, my God.
It's a great app.
This is the ship.
Welcome to Waking Maves.
Waking Maves. The ship.
Yep.
Oh, perfect.
Welcome
perfect
to intro. Smaking Dave's super good burger podcast.
We are here. Actually, it's live to the three of us. Let's be honest. This is very live. It's happening in time.
Yeah.
We are episode 85 of the podcast, which is astounding to me. When we started this, I didn't even think we'd get to episode 5, let alone 85. So it's great to have everybody joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. We have a special guest here on the podcast this week that I'm pretty excited about personally. This is Al McManus, by the way. Our friend Justin Press is high on a mountaintop, having a wonderful blowout on his hair and probably some form of nail cuticle work done, which, as you know, Justin really, he does it. He's good at it. But we are here. I'm pretty excited about this episode. Chad Nicefield is here with us. Chad, welcome. So tonight's episode, I'm pretty excited about here. I've run across our guests on Shiprock Cruise a few times and always thrilled to be able to witness what he does in person. I can't wait to get into the songwriting process here and all the things that he's done musically over the years and really dive into the intricacies of what seems to be a pretty complicated and creative life that he's living right now. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sahaj Tikitin from the band Ra.
And the crowd goes wild.
Chad did a silent round of applause there.
It was audible. So again, if you can't hear me, just let me know.
I did. I'm not hearing hand claps. Oh. Sahaj, how are you doing tonight, man? Where are you these days?
So I lived in LA for 10 years and on February of 2020, right when everything got really horrible, I moved to Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Oh, this explains a lot when you were talking about Sweetwater. Yeah,
Fort Wayne, Indiana, which my wife is from there, so it's not completely in a sort of random place to be. So we've been coming here visiting for many, many years, and weirdly with the band, there was sort of a vortex. So back in the old days, we would play a couple of venues in the Midwest. One was the Machine Shop. The other one was this place called Pierre's. And we would play these places. And almost every single time, Pierre's is in Fort Wayne. Every single time I had either 2 days before that show or 2 days after that show. So what would end up happening is I found myself in Fort Wayne all the time. In fact, the second Ra record, Duality, the photos that we took were behind Pierre's in Fort Wayne because we had that much time off that we just had a photographer come and take the pictures. And then I just found myself keep coming back. And I ended up meeting my wife there 17 years ago. And we've always sort of made a promise that if we had a kid, we wouldn't raise him in LA. So we decided to get out when the getting was good. And luckily, because the week after we left, LA closed. So it's been pretty, it was pretty fortuitous.
Did you meet your wife in Pierre's, or is it just like while you're in between shows?
So the 5 minute version of that story, which I like to elaborate on, but I'll spare you all the craziness.
We have an hour.
Okay, yeah. So then I'm going straight into it. Now, what ended up happening was the second Ra record, which was Duality. That album, at that time was. Sort of looked at as a failure because we only sold 100,000 records, which was, you know, which today people kill themselves for. But back in those days, it wasn't looked at as a success. So I really didn't know what I was doing. I sort of had like a little bit of a crisis going on, and I was in New Jersey, and I got a phone call from the radio station in Fort Wayne, and they said, "Is there any way
the
you
bear?
Can host the Bear in Fort Wayne?" Right. Cindy Miller, who was an amazing program director back a billion years ago, she asked me if I could sit in on the morning show while they found a new morning person. Somebody had quit, so they needed a fill-in. So I came to Fort Wayne for a week, really just to get away and sort of replenish my brain. And that Wednesday, and we're talking October 2005, that Wednesday, the band Trapped was playing in the venue at Pierre's. And I asked, they asked me if I would intro the band. So I knew Chris from back in the days, as you know, he's crazy. He was always crazy, by the way. But I knew him back in the days. And we I went to meet him at FYE. Remember when FYE was a thing? I went to meet him at FYE, and he was doing signings. And there was this guy who was completely out of his mind and really aggressively sort of inserting himself into mine and Chris's conversation because he just wanted both of our attention. And he was super annoying, like really, really like wanted to punch this guy in the face.
I have a trapped story with the same guy, but go ahead.
So we're freaking out. And finally, this guy leaves us alone. I don't think anything of it. So the next thing that happens is I'm in the dressing room at Pierre's. I'm getting ready to like sort of go through what I'm going to do on stage. The doors are open, the opening band. It's not quite full. People are walking in. So as I walk across the front of the stage, I do the whole cartoon thing with the eyes and the tongue and the whole, like, I see this girl and I'm just like, who is that?
The heart thumping out of the chest.
Heart pounding out of, full on mask moment, right? And I'm freaking out and I literally just like, I don't know what to do. So I just do the worst possible thing. First of all, I'm older than her, by the way. So she's like young. And I do the worst possible thing, which is turn around and start following her, which is, of course, a horrible thing to do. So I immediately readjust my trajectory. And I just walk by or go back upstairs to the dressing room and I walk back down. Now, when I walk out of that door, she's with one of her friends. When I walk out of that door, the guy from the earlier, who was a complete terrible person, is standing there with her.
Yes.
And he comes up to me and he goes, hey, I want you to meet my friends. And I'm like, no, there's no way this guy knows this girl.
There's no way this guy's my future brother-in-law.
Exactly. So I'm sitting there and I sort of like small talk with her and she's significantly out of my league. She's also super young and just sort of like, you know, essentially the Paris Hilton of Fort Wayne, right? So I sort of steal her away and I go and I'm chatting with her. Now I'm wearing a 98.9 The Bear shirt. And I say to her, and she's like, well, what do you do? And I'm like, oh, I'm a singer in a band. And here I'm like getting ready. You know, I'm ready. It's 2005. Band is still doing good, especially in this room. I'm going to drop the bomb. She's going to be like, you're that guy? So I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm a singer in a band. She goes, oh, what band? I'm like, Raw. She's like, I don't know that one. And I'm like, So then we're going through the whole thing. And I'm like, well, do you listen to the radio? And she's like, yeah. I was like, well, I have this one song called Fallen Angels. And she's like, I love that song. And then she's like, yeah, but you have a Bear shirt on. Like, you're not in the band. Like, you don't sing that. Mind you, I don't look the way I sound anyway. So it's definitely a tough sell at this moment. So I immediately call an audible. I grab her by the hand. I walk her to the back of the venue and I sing her the whole song. Right, just a cappella, straight sing her the whole. And hundreds of thousands of dollars later, she was mine. Yeah, that's the whole story.
Now, I got to rewind because the best part about that story is the Paris Hilton of Fort Wayne. I mean,
yeah, honestly, she's going to merge. Hopefully she's not watching this, which probably she isn't. I'm pretty sure she's watching the Kardashians right now. But she really did not fit. She was hyper fashionable. She was hyper beautiful. She was just a very not Midwestern girl. Her style was incredibly like LA-ish.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when we moved to LA, she worked at a clothing store called BCBG, which is literally one of the most expensive clothing store chains in Los Angeles. And that's who she is. And she's still like stunningly beautiful in the whole nine yards. But like, it was a traumatic event meeting her for me. Like literally everything was thrown out the window. Like nothing else mattered as far as I was concerned. So that's how I ended up moving to Fort Wayne the first time and living there for a year and a half. And then I took her to Florida because she wasn't quite ready to go to live full time in Los Angeles. And then 2 years after that, I convinced her. I was like, okay, we're going to LA now, because we had friends and I knew what I was going to do. So 2010, we get in the truck and we drive out.
I have three questions. Sure. I'll ask them whenever. Al, do you have something?
Go.
Okay. One, was that fella, did he ever exist in your life again from that night board?
No, except
bummer.
I ended up playing a show at Pierre's last year, right? With the reconnected Rob guys. And he had put on some weight, so I didn't recognize him, but he literally walked up to me and was like, hey, do you remember me? And I'm like, no. And he starts talking and he's like, I'm the reason you met your wife. And I'm like, oh my God, the best part of that, which of course, you know, the recognition, whatever, that's cute. The best part of it is he was still a terrible person. He managed within 5 minutes to completely reaffirm why I hated him back 17 years ago. Just absolutely horrible energy and didn't know what to say, couldn't be proper. Like, you know, was still trying to hit on my wife 17 years later. It's just very, 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 very terrible.
Interesting. My second follow-up to that question is, I should say, before I get to the third, the door that you came out of, is it by the bathrooms, the steps that you would go down? Is that the one you're referring to?
Yeah. Doors were there? Okay. Yeah, they locked that now, by the way. That door is never opened anymore. But that door used to be able to go in and out if you were the artist. Mm-hmm. And it was always sort of like a cool way to make your entrance, because it was just like this big sort of like you would walk through the hallway into the main room, you know.
So now I'm picturing this singing this now, because I played that room so many times over the years. I'm picturing where you might go to sing her the song. Did you go take her upstairs or out the back door?
No. So do you remember that in the middle of the room there's a horizontal bar?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Behind that is a semi-VIP area with tables.
Okay.
So I took her the back there, sat her down, sang the song to her, and you know, and really was just holding my breath that she didn't ask me how old I was at the time.
So then 3.5. How many times has this ever happened in your life that you sang a cappella to any human ever leading up to that?
Man, I wish I could say that I'd done it as a tactic. Honestly, it literally was the one time.
Chad wasn't even going with a tactic. He was just in general like a human person.
No tactic. You know what's sad about that is I was married before my current wife, and I had a long-term girlfriend before that, and I never sang to either one of them.
Right, so she was special.
And what's sad about it also is like it just never crossed my mind. You know, I never thought to myself, yeah, I should sing them a song or something. Mm. And when I met Kira, by the way, I don't know if you guys know this, I have a solo album that I did in 2012, right? And my solo album is sort of like Sting-ish, John Mayer-ish. It's very like pretty love songs. And I wrote it 100%. I made the album 100% because without any sort of filter and control, I wrote my wife 7 love songs.
Right.
Right. Like, so this was why I was sure that she was the one I needed to go broke with. And this is, you know, this is exactly what I did.
Isn't this great, honey? We get to go broke together. I mean, grow old together.
Yeah. No, she wasn't worried about me going broke. She was just, you know, I just remember one of my favorite stories. She's, oh my God, I hope she never watches this. One of my favorite stories is when we're first starting to date, I'm on tour with Il Nino and another band, and it's like some crazy tour, and I'm in Worcester, Mass in front of the Palladium. And I'm about to play the show, and she calls me, and we've been dating a couple of months, like really on the phone all the time, but like really just sort of like just getting serious, not really too serious. And I called her, and again, remember my Paris Hilton comment? So I'm talking to her on the phone. She had like a 2002 Dodge Sebring or something like that. That's what she was driving. So we get on the phone, and I say, oh, I'm like, hi, babe, what's going on? And she's like, I want a car. And I was like, okay. So immediately I eat to myself, I think, I can get her like a Saturn, you know, like that'd
yeah,
be.
Yeah, hell yeah.
That, at this level of the relationship, that's classy. Inappropriate. Still yeah, a brand new car.
Classy.
And she goes, I want a BMW. And I think to myself for all of 15 seconds, and I'm like, well, let's just talk about it when I get back. And of course, that Christmas, she got her first C300 Mercedes.
Oh, so she even went bigger.
Well, she first C300 Mercedes, which seven of them later, and only as recently as March was the last one.
Wow, I'm looking at the video here of you in your studio, and I'm counting 5-6 guitars I can see. If it weren't for all those cars, think of the guitars you could have.
Yeah. First of all of that, every penny I spent on her pales to the nonsense of living in Los Angeles for 10 years.
Sure.
And paying the ridiculous amount of rent I was paying to have a house in LA, on top of which, once we had Mason, I always tell people this, and I guess for some people it's not a big deal, but I just remember I was paying $1,200 a month for Mason to go to preschool 3 days a week for 4 hours a day. So a total of 12 hours a week for $1,200 a month. And that was the bargain price that everyone
Was a Saturn of education.
Yeah, that was the place where the help put their kids.
Yeah, the help.
That's crazy.
What prompted you? Let's skip back a little bit. What prompted you to get in the van to make the move initially?
You mean
you started in Fort Wayne. Well, not started, but you moved. You said in 2005, you got in the van or the truck and drove. What prompted you to go that way? You said you had an idea of what you wanted to do there. What did you want to do there? And what prompted that move?
So the early stages of sort of making transition from being a full-time artist to also being a producer and a writer was sort of, and I can say this now because I can look back clearly, but at the time I didn't really process it properly. But really what I had to do was convince everyone that I wasn't just the raw guy, right? Mm-hmm. So in my brain, I kept on saying, I can't do that unless I'm in Los Angeles. I need to be where there's all these producers and all the action and all the stuff in order for me to be able to be taken seriously as a producer. And to a certain extent, I was 100% correct, right? Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I love telling, and I talk to people, you know, when people are talking about the music industry in general, one of the things that was really sort of crazy and somewhat refreshing was when I moved to LA, I assumed there were 10,000 guys trying to do what I was doing. Like I just assumed I had just immediately became the smallest or the medium smallest fish in this massive pond. And by a year and a half to 2 years later, I realized that it was really the same 15 to 20 guys making all the records. It really wasn't that many people. So all you had to do was get in with those guys and mm-hmm. you'd end up part of the cycle. So a lot of times what happens is labels will have a band and they'll send them to LA and they sort of do the writing circle where they'll go to this guy for a couple of days and this guy for a couple of days. And it just took me a little while to be able to sort of be taken seriously that way. 2013 and 14 were really the years that I started working on stuff directly for labels, for other bands. Stitched Up Heart, Mixie was one of them. A lot of other things were starting to percolate. That was the beginning of my professional relationship with Dustin. I had known Dustin from Starset from 2010, but we started really working a lot in 2014. And that was, you know, sort of all of those things started to collect and become the basis of my credibility. And then, you know, with Raw, I was sort of putting it up on the shelf and letting it get moldy in the process. So in that whole interim between 2012 and 2020, I really didn't do much. There really wasn't anything happening on the Raw front other than me focusing on producing. And I ended up, go ahead.
Yeah, it's funny because Chad and I talked, kind of doing a little conversation about what, you know, about you and kind of preparing for the episode. And there's just these weird lulls, not lulls, just gaps. So that's
one full length in 2013, and the next one comes 2021, but there's singles and EPs that we're talking about.
Then we realize it's like, okay, there's a whole bunch of other stuff going on that he clearly has going on, whether it's producing, writing, you know, all the other stuff. So give us kind of a snapshot. Yeah. Give us a snapshot. Okay. So we know what was happening. And I think you're absolutely right. I think that's the exact, in order to give yourself credibility, be where they are. Probably we can maybe get into this in a minute, but it seems like the technology with your relationships, technology has allowed you to kind of maybe do it from anywhere, but we can you know, maybe that had a part in play of you going, you know what, I don't necessarily have to be here physically in location. I got my relationships that I built. So if you could, Los Angeles, just kind of give us the nutshell of those 10 years. It was 10 years, right?
Yeah, 2010 to 2020. So, I mean, first thing we do is we get there and I immediately try to find like a producer manager, like someone who actually does producer managing, because that's a facet of the music industry that I had literally no experience or knowledge of. But I thought for some reason it was really important. It didn't take more than 6 months or 4 months really of having a producer manager to realize that that wasn't what was going to get me in the door. I had to write hit songs or hit-ish songs and deliver them to people who mattered. And slowly but surely, it just became sort of like, in the beginning, it was people who respected Ra. Like, so if they liked the band and they're like, oh, you're in LA, we love Ra, we'll come to you. But then I would sort of show a wide variety of skill sets and they'd be like, oh, snap, that's pretty cool. Another person who was really important to the beginning process was a producer named Bob Marlette. So Bob Marlette is a guy that, going back to Saliva and Click Click Boom and then Shinedown's first record and then everything from Sabbath to Red Sun Rising to Filter to, I mean, there's just Atreyu. There's just a ton of bands that Bob Marlette has been involved with, right? So Bob and I did parts of Duality together. We actually did three or four songs on Duality. And I met him that way. And he was always like, hey, if you come out here, we can do stuff together. So he was one of the people I was sort of like using to get into the circle. And it definitely worked. And Bob is one of the nicest, sweetest dudes on the planet. And he went way out of his way to include me. I think pretty early on, I realized that the principal thing that I had to offer was melody-based and vocal-based and things like that. But, you know, I also produce, I make things sound good, I can mix, I can do all the stuff. But really, singing and passion and emotion was what I was really focused on. So as I was sort of coming up, people started to see that. When I did Starset, so the first album that I have songs on with Starset is an album called Vessels, which was their second big release. And I have four songs on that record. And one of the songs on that record is a song called Die For You. And that song is maybe my favorite song I've ever written for another artist. But once I did that and it came to life and it became successful, not only did the world see me in that way, but I was actually able to see myself that way. And I was like, oh, I can deliver on a pretty high level. And almost immediately after doing the second album, which was Divisions, and working on Manifest, which was their single, I started working with Nikki Sixx and doing the dirt stuff with which I did. I wrote those songs. I actually sing on all those new Motley Crue songs. So once I got involved with Motley, then it became like this whole thing where I'm doing stuff for Alan Kovac and then Bad Wolves and then Hyro. And then now I'm in the studio with Jason Hook all the time. I mean, it just sort of evolved into a thing. There's a lot of
six projects. Mercedes later. I get it.
Well, I wish they were mine. I had the Volkswagen.
this could be a very soothing session. I feel like unbutton the top.
I'm letting it all out. I'm letting no hair down.
This is the world that like what you're speaking is the world that I live in. I'm extremely thankful to have the conversation, listen to you talk about your nuts and bolts and how you basically built your home. I have a bunch of questions and bunch of things I wanted to kind of, you mentioned that I wanted to kind of like dive in a little deeper on, but before I do any of that, Al, did you have anything that you wanted to bring up?
No,
I wasn't sure if you guys in your research at all knew about my family history. Did you guys catch any of that?
Mm-hmm. Well, Chad doesn't have a family, so he's not interested, I assume
based on the shirt that he didn't have a family.
No,
but
you can
tell.
No, but go
ahead. It's a hard pass when I show up to a family function. They're like, not today.
Not today, stranger.
But yeah, I just want to, some of your audience knows, but
I'd love to hear it. Chad and I talked about it a little bit, but didn't get a good grasp on it. So yeah,
your we're sister, all here. Your sister, I think.
So, right. My sister, so did you guys see the original Total Recall?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So in the film, there's two girls. There's Sharon Stone, who plays his fake wife on Earth. And then he has a girlfriend on Mars who runs around with him.
Okay.
So the girlfriend on Mars is my sister, Rachel.
Oh, yes. Wow. So, now, fun fact, not that fun. When I did what Chad recommended, which is go on the internet to figure out how to pronounce your last name so I don't sound like a complete schmuck, Rachel's name came up as an actress. And I was like, oh, okay. I'm like, maybe. So there's my story. So, yeah. Okay, Rachel.
So Rachel, and my whole family, my brother David ended up being a director and a producer. And so we all have sort of like a history with filmmaking in some degree. And she's got a beautiful, I love her resume because it's movies like Falling Down, Con Air, Man on Fire. Like she's got really, really cool films on her list. Some stinkers, but like some really, really good ones that I really like. I had this part of my life where I was very, very enticed by the idea of doing films and being an actor. And I actually worked on a bunch of films, one of which was a Stallone movie that I was an assistant stunt coordinator, although I'm not an actual stunt coordinator, but I ended up doing that job for a film for my brother. It's a fun thing because, and I think it's relevant to the producer part of it because my experience with the film industry really was so absolutely different than the music industry because the music industry is not organized at all, but the film industry is hyper organized. Like there's so much money in the making of a movie that you just, so when I transitioned from working on films when I was a teenager to working in music, I just assumed that it was super organized and really, really to get, and it really was just sort of like the whims of random people was like, that's how the music industry works. But anyway, I digress. Sorry, I wanted to make sure I got that in somehow.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And it's a perfect time for that segue as we are currently live on Facebook. Listen, guys, don't be nervous. Okay. I mean, it's okay. There are friends. They're people who care about us a great deal who are watching our every single move. So now is the time to exaggerate your movements when you talk. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast. We are on episode 85 here with Sahaj Tikitin from Ra, as we know him in the Shiprock family. Definitely want to check out the first half of our conversation, which will drop on Monday. We delve into his history a little bit. We get into what I like to call the Paris Hilton of Fort Wayne. It's a whole other story. you're definitely going to want to tune in for the audio portion of the podcast on Monday when we drop. So welcome everyone. Say hello. Send us a question or two in the comments if you'd like to do that. But in the meantime, I just feel like Chad has so many questions. He's bursting at the seams. So Chad, I don't want to steal your thunder, buddy.
Well, first of all, I want to start with, because now that we're live, I want to make sure that I say it when people can hear us. Apparently, and this is news to me, but you hold a record, or used to hold a record up until very recently, for holding the longest single note by a male vocalist in one of your songs. Am I correct?
So what that is apparently there's a, it's not Guinness, right? There's some other entity out there that does like entertainment based, strictly like world record-y type things. I don't remember exactly what it was because it was a really long time ago. But at the end of a song called Scorn on our live album, so this was a live performance and it was the last song we did, I held a high B or something like that for 24 or 26 seconds, just naturally.
I just found it right now.
Okay, so there it is. So 24 seconds. So literally, I'm living in Florida. This is the time when I'm living in Florida. I get a random phone call and they tell me about this. And I'm like, is this I really thought it was like some sort of spam call that they were going to try and sell me. Oh, we're going to put you in this book. You have to buy the book. That's what I thought. And I'm like, okay, whatever. And they said to me, and they sort of convinced me. And then they said, in order for this to be for real, you need to hold it. You need to sing it on the phone right now for 22 seconds.
That was official.
Yeah. Because they're like, otherwise it could have been digitally done or it could have been done some sort of fake way in a studio. And I'm like, well, first of all, it's a live performance, but fine. If you need me to do it, I will do it. And I literally held it for 26 seconds just to show off.
Just the last and, four.
Yeah, I added that's why I said 26 originally. And I held it out and they were like, oh, and they were all laughing on the phone, but they're like, all right, man, it's great, blah, 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 blah. Didn't hear anything about it for like 2 years.
And until Chad just brought it up just now.
Somebody sends me this thing on the internet saying that you have the longest note. And by the way, the actual record is the longest single note held in a commercially released album.
Yes.
So that's the caveat is it had to be a commercially released album. And back in like 2006 or 7 or whatever it was, commercially released albums were, you know, not every day 20 million times on Spotify. So at least, you know, at this point. But then some metal guy like later on held it for 40 seconds or something ridiculous. And again, I didn't do it to do it. It was something that was inadvertent, but it held for a few years and then it became part of my wiki page, which, you know, for whatever reason, people seem to like.
Well, if you do, and you did it as part of the song, it wasn't like you set out to it to say, I'm going to try to sing this long note. It's like, no, you felt like it fit the part of the song and you were serving the song and there you go.
Yeah, I mean, just to be perfectly fair, I did it every night on this tour and I would almost pass out every night.
Yeah.
Because I would get sort of like a massive headache and my eyes would glaze and I would lose my balance. And that's the time to stop the note. was when I knew to stop singing. I'm about to pass out. Let's start doing something else.
Ladies and gentlemen, the viewing audience and the listening audience, this is what people do for you, for your entertainment.
Yeah. We did.
I have like my mind is immediate. I can't stop thinking about the phone call and like how like just nice you are to pick up the phone and be like, what? And they're like, yeah, but we need you to do a live. And you're like, well, I guess. And then you just
hold on one second. Hold on one second. Okay, you guys ready?
I mean, like, the conversation went roughly 7 to 10 minutes. So I did ask some sort of like questions to make sure it wasn't just like a joke or somebody wasn't trying to prank me. Yeah, or some other guy in a band that's calling me trying to prank me.
Yeah.
And it felt legit. So I did it. And also, I just thought to myself, well, even if it is a prank, fuck them. I'm going to do it because it's badass to do. So I did.
Totally. That's like my only hope is that your mind was like, I don't give a fuck what's happening right now. I'm going to do it. I need practice anyways.
Exactly.
So I wanted to ask then following that up, you have a bunch of interesting co-writes, production credits. This you said really took off in, with the star set stuff, but I'm looking at all of the releases. So mind you, I'm kind of like going through your discography and it seems like you had some pretty solid bangers before the star set stuff or was it star set?
Really? Yeah. I mean, I think that again, there were songs that were doing okay. You know what I mean? Like I'm talking about, let me point out the thing with the star set for me. Because to me, the thing with Star Set was it's not sort of like yes, there are elements of it that are sort of just commercial. They got big choruses, all that stuff. But it's like a concept band. They're space guys. They're wearing spacesuits. It's like a whole thing. There's a lot of techno and electronics in it. And the whole approach to it, it's very satisfying for me to sort of see something succeed that wasn't every other band. You know, I mean, I have a single on the radio right now that I co-wrote with Nothing More and Tired of Winning. And those guys are going to be on the boat. And I'm trying to talk Johnny into letting me sing that song with him, too. Since I'm there, I'm like, I'll be like, hey, man, I'll be there. Yeah. If you need a little help on that one song, I'll jump up there.
I mean, I wrote it. I wrote it and everything. So maybe that.
Yeah, I mean, I did write the chorus pretty much in a vacuum, just saying.
That song is amazing, but I didn't know it was that song that you just referenced. I've listened to it literally every day on my bike ride. I love the fucking song. And then they came out with this recently, my like Discover or whatever, release Radar, I think it is on Spotify. There was like a new re-release with like an extended version or something like that?
Yeah, so that actually is the full version and that has the Ships in the Night addendum to it. So the Ships in the Night thing was, when I heard it, I was like, hey guys, let's take that off for the single, you know? But they, you know, I remember being, okay, this is sort of a cool story. I was at LeJean's farmhouse Yeah. John Witherspoon's farmhouse.
Yeah.
Staying in his place when they sent me the original demo for Tired of Winning. And Johnny, who I had met not that many months before in New Orleans, I had been in a car and he said, I have this song. It's called Tired of Winning. And I immediately loved the title. I was like, this is a really cool title. I just immediately, like, I thought there was like a little bit of political edge to it. And it was like a little relevance to it and the whole thing. And I was like, I was a little mad that I hadn't thought of it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, that's just a great, because I get real fussy about trying to come up with a lyric for a hook line in a song that hasn't been buried to death, you know?
Yeah.
You can tell, by the way, you can tell.
That was my
major compliment about that. Mm-hmm. I don't want to divert from your story, but that's the thing I think that sets you apart when I listen to, at least when I listen to Rob music, is you pay a lot of attention to the lyric. And coming from a country music background like me, all my management and label experiences in country music, and that's the only thing that matters, right? It's the same five chords. So there you go. And actually, Alan Koenig and I were talking about that today, because he was like, oh yeah, he's on the show tonight, man. He's like, so great, man. The lyrics is just like the refined lyric. It's so refreshing. So yes, it's definitely your wheelhouse, and you can tell that that's a focus for you. So,
what was cool was, so I live in Fort Wayne, and like I said, COVID hit right at the beginning of when I moved here. So for the most part, no one was doing sessions in LA because everybody was on lockdown. But here, which is, you know, the reddest state in the country, literally, technically is the reddest state in the country. And not that that even is relevant to what I'm about to say, but it was very, very relaxed on restrictions, incredibly relaxed on restrictions. Mostly, I would say that the real reason it was relaxed on restrictions was because the population here was 280,000 and it wasn't 22 million like it is in Los Angeles. But more to make this, to tie in why I'm saying this, is when it became time for me to work on this Nothing More record, and what I was doing with them, you know, they're sort of like a self-contained machine, but they asked me if I would be able to produce the vocals for like 7 or 8 songs. Because I think what was happening was Johnny was really focused on the writing process and really focused on stuff. And he was sort of self-producing the vocals. And I just think he was getting bogged down with way too many decisions, and he needed to shove some decisions to someone else so that he could just focus on singing and writing. So we went to this whole process, and those guys are incredible. I mean, the Nothing More dudes are, they write in a way that I would never write. I'm a complete control freak. I have no interest in anybody else's opinion unless I'm working with them. But essentially, if I'm doing raw stuff, it's me. I'm in a vacuum, just sort of creating in my own. And those guys are incredibly democratic. If we changed the lyric, we had to get everyone on the phone and talk about it and the whole thing. And I wanted to kill myself, but I thought it was interesting. And I thought it was really, really crazy that we would constantly make sure everyone had their say, which was pretty amazing. When it came to Tired of Winning, at a point there was a discussion about the lead vocal the title. There's a discussion about whether the title was going to change. And I was vehement. I literally was like, the only reason I'm even here is because he said the words Tired of Winning in the car that day. And I fought hard for it. And then they all sort of agreed and it was awesome. And that's where the song is. But there's a sort of beauty to what the Nothing More guys do. But yet again, in a star set way, sort of like outside the norm, they're not necessarily straight down the middle rock songs. And there's, you know, a component of electronics and a component of like taking the organic and mixing it with machinery. And he has the scorpion on stage. Like I'm drawn to sort of adventurous stuff, which of course, you know, doesn't explain my Motley Crue things. But you know, when you get to work with Motley Crue, you say yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I had no idea what with Dirt. This is just finding this out right now. To know that not only were you sitting in that chair, but also we can listen to your voice and you know and film. I'm assuming all the songs that you're like. How many songs did you sing in the record/film? Every one of them?
No. So the film, in the movie, they recreated all the old songs.
Yes.
Okay. So they had to re-record them, I think, for master issues. So they re-recorded the old songs, and I believe Howard Benson and Mike Plotnikoff did those things. They found a singer and did that. Then for the album, for the Dirt. So, so remember, there's an album and it has a Machine Kelly on it. So it has the Dirt featuring MGK. There's a song called Crash and Burn, Ride Like the Devil. And then we did the Like a Virgin cover, which was crazy. If you listen to those now that you guys know, I'm singing on all of them. And I wrote all the melodies and co-wrote the lyrics with Nikki. John Five was pretty instrumental in driving the music in terms of writing the music parts.
He was instrumental. I get it.
Whack.
I got you.
Yeah.
I'm not smart. I don't understand half of what you're saying, but I got that.
You got that part.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, so, but it was a, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was about to change gears a little bit and talk. We got about 15 minutes here. You have candles burning back there. If you're comfortable with it, Sahaj, would you give us a little tour? Or you have dead bodies there or anything? You good?
I mean, the studio's not spectacular.
But it's better than everybody else's that Chad and I know.
It might be raining pretty bad. So anyway, let me turn the light up a little bit.
Oh no, this is a vibe, man. Look at this place.
Oh,
so,
shit.
So a lot of guys are always like, oh, it's not much. It's I got an amp and a microphone and
Yeah, I'm one of the last holdouts, so I have a bunch of actual guitar amps.
Good for
I don't use a lot of plugins. This is the corner of shame, or where people sing. So I shame people in that corner.
In the corner, baby.
My microphone isn't on there because I used it today with Corey Glover and yesterday with Corey Glover. So we were at Sweetwater recording with Corey the last couple of days. Here are some guitars. I've been endorsed with ESP since 1999. But this guitar right here, this guy right there, that is a James Troussart Explorer. And it was a gift from one Nikki Sixx. And I'll give you the 1 minute version of, or the 2 minute version of that story. When Nikki first came to the studio, and this is in LA, he comes in and he starts rattling off all of these song parts. He's like, you know, the bridge and Saints of Los Angeles and all this stuff. And I literally had to stop him and say, hey, man, I know Girls, 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 Dr. Feelgood, Home Sweet Home, and Shout at the Devil. That's it. That's my entire Motley Crue repertoire in my brain. And in a weird way, it's sort of like made it cool because I wasn't really up his butt. But I did say to him, I said, look, when I grew up, the kids that listened to Metallica and Megadeth and Slayer didn't really hang out with the guys listening to Motley Crue, Poison, and Guns N' Roses. And I was just sort of explaining that to him. And I went a little bit, I went a little too long on my love for James Hetfield. So I kept on talking about Hetfield, how I learned how to downpick with Hetfield and that Metallica was my thing and everything about Metallica. So we had a couple weeks off and he goes, I get a text message from him saying, hey, I got your present. And I was like, oh, he says, it's James Hetfield related. And I'm like, really? I said, well, if it's not James Hetfield himself, I'm not interested. He said, no, you'll like it. You'll like it. So he comes back with this guitar, which is really just stunning. It's handmade by a guy named James Troussart in California. He makes guitars for like Keith Richards and Billy Gibbons and all this other stuff. It's a very expensive guitar. And he walks in and he says, I just need to tell you, you know, when he made that guitar, he made 10 of them and he got an immediate cease and desist letter from Gibson saying, you're not allowed to make anything, call it an Explorer, use our shape, you can't do anything. So there's only 10 of those in the entire world. I have one, James Hetfield has two. So if you ever go online and look up James Hetfield Troussart, it's those guitars. He's playing them on stage. He plays them all the time. So that was like a pretty cool thing.
Where do the other seven go?
I have no idea and I didn't ask. But I have
I got one. I got mine.
I have a really cool picture of him holding, of Nikki holding it and James Troussart signing it and the whole thing. And
that's pretty cool. So cool.
Yeah.
So you use amps for recording. ISO? You have an ISO booth somewhere for the
That corner. So I've learned, first of all, the room is tuned. You see these little panels, like tuned panels. Yeah. So the room is tuned. I don't like dead rooms for vocals. But this corner just has like the cheapo foam, but it goes all the way to the ceiling and it's carpet on the floor. So it's really dead in that corner. It's almost like those little half shell things that people sometimes use.
Yep.
But I'll show you the stuff, the most important piece of gear I own, which is
a 1996 Saturn. No,
you're close though. This is the most important piece of gear I own. Can you tell what that is?
Yeah, that's a racing sim for Forza. Are you a Forza guy?
It's my PlayStation 5 and my racing wheel. That gets more use than anything else. And I'm And I'm more intimate and friendly to it than anything than in the entire
any,
house.
Any other human. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty much where I live.
What's your game of choice?
So I have my other room here. So this is the room that Dustin.
What was going on? Okay.
This is the room that Dustin and Johnny stayed in. In fact, Johnny made this scratch on the wall, which I'm still going to bill him for.
Yeah, this is unacceptable.
But I have my PlayStation 4 here and a screen, and my son, who's 7, goes on the other on the PS5, and we rock out to Fortnite. A lot of Fortnite. Oh, there's a lot of Fortnite going on with me and my son.
Yes.
He's very mediocre at it, but it's hilarious listening to him scream and yell as we play. And it's one of my great joys in life.
I love it. Yeah. Any time with your 7-year-old son is quality time, right? That's awesome.
For sure.
That's awesome.
It's so cool down there. I mean, I assume this is down or is it up?
This down is the basement.
Yeah.
We're in the basement here. And is it raining?
I don't know.
It stopped raining, but it was terrible.
Quick question. Where do you keep the GIMP?
It's
not a trick question. I didn't mean to stump you.
And I have threatened to put children in here.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's a good spot.
This corner, actually, the Marshall cabinet and the Mesa cabinet are in there.
I was going to say
wired and mic'd.
I was wondering where they were. Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Is that ISO? Is that just like ISO? Space?
No, I use the Torpedo the amp the amp loader thing. So this thing here, this guy.
Yeah.
It makes it so you can run the amps hot, but they're not loud.
Yeah, like an aux box, right?
Yeah, basically. Same thing.
Well, but are you micing the cab? But you're micing the cabs.
Yeah, I got them both mic. I have a ton of mic pre's. I actually have space for drums in here. So I actually cut drums in here sometimes.
Gotcha. I was going to ask, let's see. Oh, no, when you opened the GIMP door there where the cabinets were, I thought maybe homeboy from Pierre's was going to be in there, like his bones.
Yeah.
Where you brought him home one day and just gave him the business, just let him leave him there to rot. You know what I mean?
My nightmare is that I'm going to run into him when I don't have the cushion of other people to just be like, hey, man, I suck to these people. Like, I'm going to run into him and he's going to absolutely take up way more time than I want him to.
A day, a whole 24 hours.
Yeah. And I weirdly do sort of owe a certain degree of happiness to this guy. So
yeah,
that's true. A certain degree.
Yeah.
But I feel like with those things, there is a shelf life.
Right? Oh, well, you know, it's marriage. It's 17 years. I'm amazed that after 17 years, she still makes me laugh and we have as much fun as we do, to be honest.
Right.
I'm not an easy guy to live with. I'm like, you know, super moody, artsy fartsy, miserable. I hate aging. I hate all the things that, and after a while you do, you know, 700 songs later, you hate music, you hate everything, mm-hmm. but it's still awesome. Yeah.
So
it's awesome to hate.
Well, here's the thing. You got to have a little hate in your heart to write the kind of music that you got to have a little bit of anger and angst in there somewhere knocking at you. Otherwise, where does it come from? It's not authentic unless there's a little bit of it in there.
I think, to be perfectly honest, I think, you know, at a certain point, one of the things that I really sort of became comfortable with is tapping into things that I've sort of put away. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I'm not a kid anymore. I don't really have the anger and the frustration that I had when I was 25, but I remember it and I can certainly tap into it when I need to. I mean, it's a weird life being a person that writes 12 to 15 songs a month. And when I say 12 to 15 songs, I'm not talking like some guy that does like sync fit things for film and television. Like, these are like fully realized songs that other people are relying on in order to survive. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of pressure. And that becomes sort of like a blur, you know, and it took a very long time to sort of understand how to process the writing process and the music process and know that, you know, sometimes giving your all doesn't necessarily serve the song, because sometimes you have to give what the song wants and sometimes your is not, is not it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, I feel like I could literally spend another hour chatting with you about this stuff. It's been great. Certainly. Thank you for doing it. Thank you for being here with us. I do want to talk a little shop here as it pertains to Shiprocked.
Oh, man. I have lots of funny Ship Rock things too. I love that place.
Well, I want to fast forward to our future. Can you fast forward to the future? I don't even know.
Yeah,
just wait for it. Can you?
They made movies about it.
Whatever. I mean, it was probably a total recall joke in there somewhere, and I could try to put that together. So you're going to be joining us as a stowaway this year, which super psyched about. There's also a gentleman named Keith Wallen who's going to be joining us. Is that correct? Am I anyone? Yes.
Yeah.
There's been some conversations you and I have had about a very, very special and highly unique show that may be happening on the ship. Before I give that away, is that something that we could talk about?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Okay.
So from what I understand, we're gonna be experiencing a U2 / Police acoustic treatment, if you will. Is that correct?
So, to serve the audience properly, I will say I'll probably do sort of the top three or four Raw songs so that no one feels cheap.
Completely alienated to start with.
Yes. So I'm doing the stowaway thing and I'm also doing the acoustic thing. Mm-hmm. I think, right?
Yes, That's what I have in my copious notes.
Yeah. So the acoustic thing is going to be sort of Raw centric. And then also I came to this realization a couple of weeks ago, how cool would it be if I covered some of my more successful songs that I co-wrote?
Love it.
So I came up with ideas on how to do, like, you know, even the Bad Wolves song that I did, which is sort of a heavy track, but just cool ways of bringing some of the songs I did. And then I was also going to put in some of my favorite songs of all time. Now, my stowaway set, which I'm hoping we can do what we did last time, which was sort of take control of it outside of what we're supposed to do. But Keith, who you mentioned, actually features on a Raw cover of Incomplete, who happens to have Jason Hook playing guitar on. So we're looking at how do we formulate a set where it's me, Jason, and Keith. We cover however many songs you want us to do, if it's four, whatever, and we put it together. I have two Police songs that I want to do. We want to do the Incomplete song. And then there's another song that we're sort of putting together with Keith in mind, but there's some U2-iness possibly. I don't want to give all of it away. I don't want to say
No. We got to reserve some. And by the way, Shiprocked family, this is what's known as workshopping.
Yeah, we're workshopping for sure. Absolutely.
Everybody's getting a little backstage view of how the conversations are going to go and how this thing is going to morph into something awesome for them. So that's amazing. I love it. We're going to figure out all this stuff. And, you know, especially with the stowaways, it's obviously about, it's all about the artistry and whatever. Hopefully everybody gets a chance to kind of express themselves in the way that they want, right? It's not just, you know, that's the whole point of the thing. The spirit of the thing is a living, breathing musical moment, right?
Yeah. And Jason is going to be playing with his actual band.
Yes.
Which you've already announced. And he's hyper-focused on that. So I also want to make sure that his stowaways situation is sort of easier, because I know he's going to be hyperly stressed. But all the stuff I've already discussed with him, I've already put it on. He's one of those guys, he doesn't want to wait. He wants 8 months of lead time on everything.
He does indeed.
So I'm already giving him the songs I want him to learn, so that when I do my stowaway set, he can just jump up with me and there's no stress, so he can focus on his thing.
I love it.
So I think it's going to be really, really fun.
Now, I was listening to your newest record today, Intercorrupted. Thank you. And as that was playing, I was like, I was starting to think about one of the songs with Jason came up. And I know that when I was talking to Jason, well, when we booked him for the Stowaways, I was chatting with him and he's like, this is kind of the debut of the band. And he's like, I'm looking for a singer. I don't have any idea where that even went or what the hook thing is really going to be. But I'm listening to your tunes today. I had a long drive today, a couple of them, and I was jamming your tunes. And I was like, why wasn't Sahaj Jason's first call for this band? Like, literally, your voice with what I'm envisioning, what he's going to do, I'm like, how is this not happening? So
the real answer to that is a very simple one, and it immediately disqualifies me, which is why I think it's easy to describe.
Hepatitis.
But he wanted the option to do his former band songs in the context of
right. perhaps. He mentioned that to me. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, and that was essentially, that disqualifies me 100% yeah. because I have none of that in me.
Right.
So I can listen to it and I can write it, but that I'm not going to be able to pull that stuff off.
Right. Gotcha.
At a show, you know. Well,
very simple answer.
Whereas who we have settled with actually is covering quite a few bases, and I have to say, I had to put my neck quite out on the line to convince him to use this person. But I was the vocal producer and I co-wrote a bunch of
songs. Okay, great. Okay, good. And so at least you're in the room. I like that.
No, no, no. I said, look, I know what I can do with this guy. Let me do it. Mm-hmm. And he was anxious. And then once it started coming in and he started listening, he went literally from, I don't know what I'm going to do to, hey, let's book Shiprock. Right. So it's good.
That's amazing, man. Well, Chad, you probably have some Uber Eats that you got to get to. Carl needs a walk. Sahaj, thank you, dude. Thank you so much for this. I could just sit here and just hear you tell us all this stuff for another hour. But yeah,
we can do it again some other time.
Jesus won't let us. He's
we just do not it on the ship. I feel
like we do. We did Making Waves on the Ship last year. Maybe we'll have you on board and do it there as well. So very
I'll
much
be drunk for that.
To, yeah, great. The best. Great. We will drop this full episode on Monday. If you want to hear some interesting insights about Fort Wayne, Indiana, I recommend you picking that up. Remember to rate, review, subscribe, and like. Chad, thank you, sir, for being here. Thanks to Jennifer in the background who makes this thing go, and Heather and Peggy and Kathy, and of course, Alan Koenig, our captain, without whom none of this would be possible. So, Hodge, thank you again for being here with us, man. We really appreciate
my
it.
My pleasure. I had a blast. Anytime. Yeah.
I love it, man. Take care of yourself, and good luck with Mason. And listen, don't get down on him too bad if he doesn't have the Fortnite skills yet. He's learning.
At least he's mediocre.
I don't know. I feel like it's never going to get any better, but it's fine.
I love it, man.
He's got something to look forward to then.
Yeah.
Sounds great. Appreciate it, buddy.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
You got it.
Bye.
Hey everyone, this is Tuck from Fit for a King and Off-Road Minivan. Every week I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.